Hello, and welcome to Required Reading, the podcast that revisits the most impactful books from our childhood. I'm your host, Erin Bowles. I am a writer, actor, and comedian. And this is week three of Camp Required Reading. We are doing another summer camp book, and our guest today is Victoria Harley. Victoria is a documentary researcher by day and movie trivia host by night. You can play the Quizzard of Oz every second Saturday of the month at 10 p.m. at the Pack Theater. She is also a producer and co-host of A Breath of Fresh Movie with Chelsea Pope, who was here a couple weeks ago, which is a weekly cinema podcast. She lives in Los Angeles and she loves drag. Hello.
Thank you for reading that.
Oh,
I'm
of
like, oh,
course.
like when you were like, ask me, like, here, just get a bio. I'm like, oh, the existential dread of writing a bio. So I feel like we nailed it. We did
We
it.
did.
Yeah. Thank you for welcoming me. And yeah, I listened to Chelsea's episode. So yeah, ready to talk about camp.
I'm so excited. We are doing Fear Street by R.L. Stine. I think this is book 12, Lights Out. Fear Street is the predecessor and older, cool teen sibling of Goosebumps.
Very true.
So, what is your relationship with R.L. Stine, Goosebumps, Fear Street? Do you have any familiarity?
Yeah, no, totally. I think the way you just described Fear Street is exactly correct because I definitely read my fair share of Goosebumps and I definitely got a little into Fear Street, but I for some reason it was not like one of those series that I devoured quite like, I'll admit, like Babysitter's Club. But I just remembered this morning as I was like thinking about what am I going to say today? There was like a whole sub-series in Babysitter's Club of babysitter mysteries. And
Oh.
that was my favorite. There was like one about a lighthouse that I must have read that like, I mean, it was probably the only one I owned, but I read it like maybe 20 times. I don't know. And in fact, just, you know, you should thank you for sharing. I mean, I love the Internet Archive, but seeing this scanned in copy really just was like, wow, I'm having summer reading program memories flying back into my head right now. Like, I love books that advertise the series of books it's a part of.
Yes.
Like the advertising and the like right in to the P.O. box. Like, oh my God, I never did it, but like, oh, that whole like Scholastic Book Fair, gotta collect them all kind of thing. Yeah. I loved a
Yeah.
good series and I loved my library, and these were definitely there.
R.L. Stine is so fun and just clever, and I feel like probably a very good guy. He just loves writing for kids. And yeah, like you said, I found like a scanned in internet archive of this, and there's something like you said about it that like you can smell it through
Yeah, almost.
the
Yeah. I mean, I used to feel like, oh, I like the smell of books, but I'll be honest, I've gotten some things that have cracked open from like thrift books that are like, oh, these need to air out. These are a little funky. But yeah, no, the scan and even just R.L. Stine, I think everything was very much packaged similarly. And
Yes.
there was even something about the Goosebumps having those textured covers. I used to rub my hands across that. And of course the TV show. I mean, that like I think proved that this was like such a wildly popular thing. But I think just being a kid, it was so nice to have something that was like a little ghoulish, like a little dark. We need that. Like we need a little, you know, I suddenly remembering how important this genre was for a kind of like little morbid kid who, you know, like, no, I don't care about this or that, but I do want to know about the murder
Right.
or the monster or the beastie. Like,
And what's your relationship with summer camp?
I mean, I've been to both day camps, sleepaway camps. It was definitely a thing. I was lucky enough that my parents like could afford to do that. You know,
Yeah.
it was definitely a privilege thing. The one I feel like I remember the most though was I went to this camp in Yellow Springs, Ohio that was at this place called the Glen Helen Nature Preserve. So it was very kind of like hippie town and very granola. It was, you know, staying in cabins and going to a mess hall every day and like being taught not to waste food, like don't take more than you're gonna fin, you know, and learning stupid songs. And I went to like photography camp, which actually was really fucking cool because
Yeah.
we developed our own shit. And yeah, that was, I should have just done that. But I definitely, okay, so like here's the thing, I can't believe holding this back, but like my first sleepaway camp, the very first day of camp, I was 13 years old, I got my period.
Oh
And
no.
yeah, and I was so like, unable to talk about that with anybody, nobody, or, that I actually just faked sick. And my parents came and picked me up. And I went home with them. And there was kind of this understanding like, you're going back tomorrow. You're like, you
No.
know, ever sick. Okay. But then like I remember slipping away after dinner to like go upstairs to my parents' bathroom to like go find the sanitary pads and like take like I looking back, I'm like, why did you go through all of that just to like hide what was a perfectly normal fucking step? But I just treated that like I was a secret agent or something. And you know, there's some part of me, it's like, I bet somebody figured it out. You know? So my relationship to camp is generally positive, but I did have like a very like
One hard day, one really hard day.
A very classic growing up story. It just kind of like that feels like the sort of thing that shows up in a story, not
Yes.
something that actually happens to a person. Like I think even as it was happening, I feel like I had some sense of like the irony or the like, of course, like so.
Yes.
Yeah, that's camp for me.
Nice. I actually also got my period not at camp, but like I got home from camp and I was like getting out of the sweaty clothes. And I was like, I screamed down the hallway. I was like, Mom, I think I got my period. And she goes, Why do you think that? Like, well, there's blood in my underwear. And she goes, Oh, okay.
Well,
Yeah.
yeah, probably. Yeah. I mean, I'll say it wasn't like I didn't know what was happening. You know, my mother was a nurse or is a, you know, retired. She's still alive, though. But yeah, I weirdly felt like I just had to keep it a secret and take care of it because it was too embarrassing that it happened then.
Yes.
And like, oh my God. So, but generally, I do like camps. At one point, a friend of mine went back and like worked as a counselor at one, and I had a little bit of envy there about like, oh, do I want to do that? I'm like, the answer is no. But I do think like being a camp counselor is such a that's such like a good choice, actually. I think like at a certain age, like what a sick job, honestly.
I went to the, like sleepaway camp twice when I was 8, 9 or something, but I was a camp counselor for a day camp throughout high school and some of middle school, and I loved it. I mean, I had this day camp that like was my life, and so getting to be a part of that was really fun. And it was also fun to like track how you engage with it differently every year, like going back again and again, because like there was one song that I was like I would never sing and I hated it, and then I got to be like a counselor age and I was like, oh, actually this is cool again, and it's fun to be silly and to not have an ego and be too sensitive. And so it was such a treasured part of my life, which is why it's so exciting to revisit.
Anyone ever die on your watch? Transitioning to talking about
No.
camp nightmare.
No one ever died. My friend did break her arm. We were at, there was like a little one room schoolhouse museum that was kind of nearby. And we were there on a little excursion. We like took a little hike there. And she and another friend were horsing around, pushing and shoving. And I said, guys, someone's gonna get hurt. So they stopped. And then one girl gave one last shove. And she fell over, she broke her arm. And this school had little, the souvenir for the museum was little tiny wooden rulers. So it was a very intense Girl Scout moment of we got the rulers, we got the bandanas, we made a splint in time. It was very cool.
They flew into action. I love that. Oh my God. They're like, wait, I've been trained for this.
Finally.
Everyone stop. Everyone stop. This is great.
Exactly. I've been EpiPen trained since I was really young and like never had a chance. You never had the moment.
Your moment's yet to come. One day it's going to present itself and you're going to be ready. You're going to be so ready.
But this is Fear Street Lights Out is the story of young Holly going to Camp Nightwing, her uncle's camp. This is,
Uncle Bill.
His camp is dying.
It's a mess. Can we like talk? I mean, I don't want to cut you off. Finish your preamble, but.
But Uncle yes. Bill. Camp Nightwing is in trouble. This is the last summer. Holly is trying to do her best to save it, but someone is trying to ruin this camp, and it's her job to figure it out. But yeah, this camp needs dire help.
It shouldn't ever have been open.
No.
For this to happen, right? Because like I went back and reviewed the details. It was like, okay, one year lightning struck the rec hall and burned it down. So there was a fire. One year there was a flood. One year there was a measles outbreak. And then finally last year, a camper was killed in a boating accident. So it's like Friday the 13th for sure. Mm-hmm. Like we're in that territory. And they even mention it in the book.
Yeah, pretty early on.
Yeah, it's like, I know. But spoiler, it is basically that story, except Well, not exactly that story. It's different. But I was just blown away by these letters that we get to read. Like the way
Yes.
the book starts is like, "Dear Chief," and it's like somebody basically explaining how like you feel this foreboding presence over the whole story because of these letters. And I did think it was funny that it was signed like, "Yours forever, me." Letters, me.
Yes. Throughout the novel, there are these letters, and it opens with a great one of "Dear Chief, basically, I'm gonna ruin camp." They're very twiddling the fingers, very menacing and exciting. It's so fun.
I think it was like, I mean, I'm laughing, but they served their purpose really well.
They were very chilling.
Like, okay, let's set this up. Like, oh, okay. Like, we know from the start this is bad. So no time is wasted. I appreciate that. And like the first incident where, every time there's some incident, a red feather is found. And like, they start that shit like right away. It's right away. But what I wondered about those previous incidents, like, because I didn't read all of these Fear Street things.
No, like, me either.
It makes me wonder like, oh, wait, were those other books? Were those others? Like, was there a measles story?
I went through, because I never read Fear Street. This was my first Fear Street book. I watched the three Netflix, not the one that came out this year, but I watched the three Netflix movies when they came out, and those were very fun. And I really enjoyed this idea of like, there's just a town where everything bad happens and it's cursed and we all know it. It's just rough. I love that the other town is, or that this town is named Shadyside. I just love the
Camp Nightwing.
So I looked like for the ones that are about camp. So I think this is the only camp one. But something interesting is Chelsea, your co-host, did a Goosebumps camp one. And that was also run by an uncle. He wasn't anyone's actual uncle. Call me uncle. And that never happened at any of my camps. We all had camp names.
Yeah, it was, no, we don't do that.
No.
Uncle Bill owns this Camp Nightwing, which is no less cursed than Shadyside. It's just like where evil goes camping, you know. It's like, oh, I'm camping. But there were names that were mentioned, like, and I was like, I don't know. It just made me wonder, like, oh, are they in other stories that, you know, like they've had their own traumas and now they're here. But yeah, very much like a Sunnydale kind of thing where it's a very high concentration of evil and, you know, mysterious deaths seems to occur here. And we're all kind of fine with it, like, because, you know.
It is this attitude of like, that's just life.
That's how it is, I guess. Like, again, the like last year, someone was killed in a boating. I'm like, why is this camp open? How did they open at all? And then somebody dies in this session
oh
of
my gosh.
Which, like, poor Deborah. I mean, didn't get to know her very much, but, you know.
No, Deborah dies right on page 100, and it is, like, for most of this book, the scares are social. The scares are like, no one likes me, everyone hates me. Deborah's death is gruesome.
Very gruesome, yeah.
It's something like bloody pulp of a face, and it's
like on a potting wheel, right? Like, doesn't she, it's like,
her necklace... gets stuck in a pottery wheel, which is also so inventive. I love it.
I mean, yeah, especially if it was like one of those long, you know, pasta necklaces you made at camp. You know, she was the like crafts director. But she didn't deserve that. But yeah, it definitely ups the stakes. And again, it's like, oh, if anything more bad happens, then we'll have to close. I'm like, this is a really high threshold. Like, I don't know what is happening in this county. They're all inured to it. They just, they're like, just happens a lot.
It is surprising that someone dies last year and that is not the last year of camp. We're gonna try again.
And I mean, I'm like, Uncle Bill, like, what is going on? Like, did you, like, it makes me wonder if he made some kind of deal and he's just, you know, being visited by all this evil as punishment. I don't know. Like, Uncle Bill probably deserved his own series, but because he's over the age of, you know, 19, we don't follow his life. But Uncle Bill's a mess.
Uncle Bill, there is a story there.
Sure. And again, I'm like, maybe there's a series. Who knows? Yeah. The measles outbreak, that killed me. I actually was like, I'm like, what is this? You know, 2019? I mean, no, it's sad how much it's gone up, actually.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I had to write down all the names of the, like, there's like almost an equal number of boys and girls. Like, it almost feels kind of like a play in that respect. Like there's a distinct cast and
Yes.
it's easy to keep it all straight. Like I'm like this read is the clarity of it. Then the only ambiguity there is around who's the killer or
Yes.
who keeps booby trapping these things trying to kill
Yeah.
people. And I do like how, I mean, if you watch like a lot of, murder mystery movies or thrillers, you start to train yourself to look at like all the people who are around the main character. Like, well, it's got to be like the sister or somebody really close. And, sure enough, yeah, it was the daughter or it was this. And so I like that this is helping kids like develop that genre awareness of like, these are the tropes and this is how you build like, oh, he was being secretive for another reason, like the false alarm over John, who was dating a camper. I'm like, okay, what's the age difference here? Because that seems a little sus.
Yeah, that's a whole. Holly has a best friend named Thea or Taya who has a crush on John. They had a little romance last year, and John is being secretive, but his secret is not murder. It's that he's dating like a 15-year-old.
Which,
And
I
I.
mean, isn't much better. Let's
No.
a little better, but not much.
And I think he said he's almost 3 years older. And there's a lot of story very suddenly of like, and our parents won't let us stay together. And we're,
Yeah,
yeah.
you're totally right. Yeah, it was a lot of story all of a sudden, like loaded,
Yeah.
or like,
Although
oh.
I'm realizing Holly has this ex-best friend Jerry, who they discover is at the camp. And Jerry has the same backstory. Jerry doesn't like Holly anymore because Holly accidentally told Jerry's mom that Jerry was seeing an older boy.
That's right.
And it's the same thing. RL,
He's
huh?
got, maybe, I mean, I don't want to, depiction is not endorsement, but maybe, I'm just gonna think like maybe he had a sister who went through something. Like, no, I don't know.
Interesting.
But no, the whole like whether we're like sanctioning it or being like suspicious of it, that dynamic definitely goes on. So, in that sense, it rings true. But yeah, like I thought that whole setting somebody up, I'm like, okay, one of these things is what they seem. There was Kit who just like makes bad jokes, I think. Although he's like in it early and then I feel like he kind of vanished. Like he just like gone. I don't, they didn't know what to do with him. I still can't get over this Camp Nightwing. Could you come up with a darker name? Like Camp Kill'em Kids, or like I would never go to a place called Camp Nightwing.
Although I think in the Fear Street movie from a couple of years ago, there is a summer camp, Friday the 13th one. And I think the camp in that is also called Nightwing. The camp in the Goosebumps book that Chelsea and I did, I think was like Night Moon or something. And I was frustrated that it was not identical.
No, I mean, it's like, where is this universe? Like, and that's some of what I liked about these series. I'm asking all these questions, like, is that something? Is that just because I remember the payoff of other series or like just in jokes or like, I mean, I loved Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the TV show. So like, then of course I was like between, because we couldn't stream everything. Okay. You had to wait. And there was a whole long summer. So I would go to the library and they had that like series of Buffy books. And they were terrible, but I read them all. And they would have these little allusions and things that if you hadn't seen the show, it would probably not make any sense. And so I feel like, oh, is there a whole lot of stuff being given to me like that that I'm just not receiving because I'm not in Fear Street, in Shadyside. So I'm okay living with the curiosity being unanswered. I'll just say that. But I did like think about this was such a like, of course I know it's for kids, but it was such an easy read. It was just like a breeze. It took no time and it was kind of fun. So it's, I don't know. I'm like, do I want to go to the library and just pull out like a stack of Fear Streets and
I'm
just
thinking about it.
answer some questions,
I'm thinking about it, yeah, because it is, it's so fun. And there is like sleuthing, not only within the book, like you're talking about, but like across books, and it's like rewarding paying attention. And I think that's great to engage readers.
Yeah, because it's funny because as I was like just reviewing details about it, it did say like, right, there's a mystery element. I'm like, that's right. She does sort of decide to like look at the suspects and she model and I it's a lot of transformations and it but I think again it's really good instructional material for like this is what that genre is and this is requires and yeah it felt I mean I see why they get adapted into these movies they're perfect for it or at least like a half hour monster of the week or maybe hour long kind of thing I don't know They're definitely, I'm glad these exist. I think kids definitely need some like tame darkness. And
Yes.
it's dark, but it's not like it's fine. You know,
Yeah.
it's the perfect level.
I think so. And I think it's like there's one really gruesome murder that I think is like just enough. I think like you need one really good big scare. And then there's even a moment pretty early on because Holly is set up as like, I'm not a camp person. I don't want to be here. I'm doing it as a favor. And there's a line really early on where she's like, sometimes it's actually fun to be scared. And I was like, that's the thesis of the whole series. That's really nice.
It's true. I think I missed that. It's so funny though, as you're saying that, like, oh, I don't really want to do this. I'm just doing it for my uncle. I'm like even the mom is like, he needs your help. Like, and it's like, why is the financial future burden being placed on this girl's shoulders? Like, that's not right. I don't like that.
Yeah, I
But I
guess
get
that's
it.
another element of shady side.
It stakes. I get it. Yeah, shady indeed. Yeah. This idea though of like, right, like I can't just leave. It's giving some sort of emotional reason, right? Or motivation, which I appreciate, but still it's oh my God. This camp, just close it.
I went to camps with their fair share of like I had a rabies scare at camp
My
one
God.
year. There was a bat in the cabin next to mine, so all of the cabins nearby had to just get rabies shots. The Girl
Bad.
Scouts paid for it. It was pretty minor. They like redid the cabins so bats wouldn't get in, and that was it. You know, they cleaned up real well.
Yeah, the rabies vaccine people were like, ah, sweet, made our goal. Yeah.
But I did like what you were saying. There is this great cast of characters. There's Kit the jokester, there's John, who's like broody, sort of angel, talking about Buffy type. And there's like Mick, who is I don't know, a lush.
Don't know what about Mick. I mean, it's like Sandy's the one who is the monster, you know? Sorry. You have it read it to the end. But yeah,
Sandy, the very nice boy, is the bad
Sandy's
guy.
very nice one. And I'm like, whereas like Mick, who's kind of a jerk. He was very like overly affable, like trying to be everybody's like friend and like,
Yeah,
you haven't seen
very
me.
flirty.
Yeah, I'm like, and the whole thing down on the dock, and like, although I was like, Holly, you do not laugh at somebody when they fall into the water or you at least joke it back. But I was like, girl, I was worried he was gonna like come for her before that. Like, I thought he might kill her, and that was like the line, like that you laughed at me. Oh God. Yeah, John. Yeah, John had a knife in his hand. And it's, oh my, it just like, damn, like everybody's okay with just like mild violence or being threatened. Like, I feel, yeah, it's very, I'm gonna stick with this. It's like Sunnydale thesis. I think everybody has just accepted that this is a dark universe and no one knows any better.
There are those Buffy is huge for me, and there's moments where they do acknowledge, and like the rest of the students in the town sort of be like, a lot of weird stuff happens here. There's some great
Perennially.
moments as they like graduate high school in the third
Yes.
season where they're like, we know, we all know.
100%. Yeah. Oh, there's like a high death rate. The property values are low. You know, like there are these like very like clear indicators. Yeah, part and parcel with series like this. It's like that entry level darkness where, you know, as you get older, you can unfortunately fill in the blanks with your imagination with a whole lot worse and more. But these like things are just dark enough that you're getting like you're flirting with it a little bit. It's pretty tame ultimately, and there's really nothing about it that's harmful. I definitely think like people needed an option, you know, and not that I think of as horror as being, I mean, a lot of women love it, a lot of girls actually really love it, but it does feel like it's often sort of the purview of boys, like the whole Goosebumps and Fear Street. But I'm like, nah, like this is so perfectly non-gendered. Like, it's just, I don't know. He's a good writer, you know, and I knew that. I always knew that. But it is interesting just reading it as an adult and appreciating like how much like I said, tutelage and instruction is going on there. And I think there's something about that that's like, that's actually really sweet. Like there's a very sweet thing about, I'm gonna walk you through this like haunted house, but it'll all be okay at the end. And man, does it wrap up like they're like, and I know we're like blowing over the thrilling climax, but just like the last, like the it's like a page and a quarter of a page, and it's like, I think you're starting to get the hang of this place, and like, I think I am too.
They do seem to insinuate that like camp is gonna keep going even
Gonna keep killing
after
students.
even after Deborah's been murdered, even so Sandy is our bad guy who seems like the sweetest guy at the camp, and it's revealed that it was his stepbrother who died last year.
Seth.
Yeah, of course. Seth. Yeah, he had the Jason Voorhees experience.
Yes, who died because there was a canoe trip and Deborah wasn't paying attention or something. But it's about revenge. And I feel like that, I haven't read any other Fear Street, but there's a podcast called Teen Creeps that does a lot of like Fear Street and Christopher Pike and sort of this. And so I feel like revenge is sort of a, not a hallmark, but maybe a familiar trope within
Totally.
it.
Yeah. I mean, that's interesting because, like, I again, without having read other installments, it does, like, I remember Goosebumps, like, definitely tapping into different types or different elements of fear, you know? And I think, like, I mean, that's what they say about horror is it's taking something that's very benign and kind of making it not benign, making it a horrible threat, taking something totally innocuous. I mean, the shower scene in Psycho, you know, an example, you know, that messed people up, still kind of gets to me. But yeah, I think there's just a level to this that yeah, it's I don't know. I really think there's like a service being done here. Like
Absolutely.
I think people need these, like, they need to feel fear. I mean, Fear Street, it's actually like a weirdly genius title concept. Let's play with like your fear of a hospital. Let's play with your fear of camp. Like, there's lots of things to mine. And all along the way, you're right. Like, it can be like, oh, maybe it's a vengeance thing. And I think, yeah, vengeance is like such a, it allows the plotting to happen, you know, which allows the mystery and the unraveling. Like, if it was just somebody chaotic, just slashing left and right, it's like, well, there's no mystery. So, like, yeah, you have to
Exactly.
develop some kind of a motivation.
Maybe horror is easier to, like, in talking about sort of a dipping a toe, a stepping stone. I think horror is easier to understand when there is motivation and when there is a reason behind it, rather than sort of like
Yeah.
the reality of adulthood of things being without reason.
Right. That they're just chaotic and without. No, you're right. I mean, in a way, it's like, right. Because even if Sandy is doing horrible things, we gave him motivation. We gave him a reason. He's not just some like psycho kid. Like, so that's actually like, it's a pretty sophisticated like concept, I think, to be, or just, it's just, again, I feel a service that it's like, even these are nice gray kind of books in terms of the morality. And I don't mean like, you know, I'm sure there were parents with times were like trying to ban Goosebumps. But man, yeah, it's letting people explore these weird sort of dark things. And I don't know. I mean, that's like the nice feeling at the end of a scary movie is like, oh, okay, I'm all right. Yeah, I never used to be a huge horror person, despite the, like, you know, Goosebumps and things like that. And of course, the Babysitter Club mysteries, you know. And then I don't know when it happened, but at some point I sort of transitioned to reading like true crime, which, like, once you open that door, it's
It's
hard to
hard to
go
go
back.
back.
But there was a natural progression, you know, and this was part of it. So.
Fear Street has also, and I think it's because throughout Holly is sort of like, well, I saw this on TV, or like I saw this in a detective show. It felt so Scooby-Doo in a like
Yeah.
and in meaning that with all the love in my heart.
Oh, yeah.
I've also been like putting on Scooby-Doo in the background just silently, and because there is a structure and a format, and I think something really consistent through a lot of kids' books that I've read is like not being believed by the adults in your
Yeah,
life is
totally.
so common.
Yeah, and it comes up in this. Yeah, Uncle
A
Bill, the
lot.
police, everyone. That is a horrifying feeling and one that kids can relate to big time. Because I think, I mean, I'm not a parent, so I can't understand at the end of the day of raising a child. I think like attunement is so important, right? Like whether it's with your baby or, you know, with your dog or your cat or whatever, but like just slowing down long enough to kind of like, what are they feeling right now? And I don't have to feel it exactly, but can I kind of understand it and be in it with them? And yeah, I think again, these books feel like an opportunity to like attune to something that you probably don't have many other outlets for. And the fact that, like, I don't know if these actually ever were banned or not. I'm sort of curious, like, if R.L. Stein ever had to deal with that.
I wonder. It's
Everything is banned now, but I'm just thinking about like in the early 90s, because this was 1991, this was published. And it was like, you know, it was like a few years later that Beavis and Butthead got like in all that trouble because the kid was like playing with matches or whatever. And I just, and so they had to start airing it like late at night. And so I just, I don't know if like we were quite there yet because like we didn't have that 24-hour news cycle of like needing a story, needing people to be scared, people to be worried. So yeah, I wonder if that, this preceded that. But then, you know, there was the satanic panic and like people thought D&D was evil
Oh my
until
gosh,
they
yeah.
realized, like, oh, it's just math. Like, you know.
It's just math and dress up.
Yeah,
Yeah.
storytelling. Yeah, it's super nerdy. It's completely safe. And in fact, I think D&D has, similar to these books, I think D&D has saved the world from some
Yes.
very unhappy people who are able to like have a life and a exercise a kind of role play. Like it's
Yeah.
fine with it.
And D&D, something I never having played but having like watched a lot, D&D does a lot for building community. I think there's a lot of kids
Oh
who
yeah.
like maybe wouldn't have had friends except for
No,
D&D. Yeah.
exactly. That's just what I mean. It's like, you know, whether it's like playing cards with people or dice, whatever. I think these little subcultures do more than just entertain themselves, you know.
Yeah.
They're definitely touchstones. And yeah, just even thinking, like I was fortunate to grow up near a really great library and just like that satisfying feeling of seeing like the whole run of the books on there and like, I can get them all. Like, you know. Yeah, I owned a couple, but I think I pretty quickly was like, no, I'll just get at the library, you know.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need to buy them all. Although there was, on the
Okay.
subject of serialized books, there was a series called Fearless that came out when I was probably like, I don't know, the right age, basically, you know, maybe 13, 14, by a woman named Francine Pascal, I think. And it was just like about a girl who was born without like a sense of fear. So she was like, so her parents, where it gets really silly, is like her parents who are like, you know, ex-CIA or some bullshit. Like they train her in martial arts so that like, well, she's probably gonna get into fights and stuff because she doesn't have any fear. So we better like make her a killing machine or whatever. Anyway, it was so dumb, but it was all set in like Greenwich Village, New York City. And I think I was just enjoying a story that was set somewhere else.
Yeah.
And it was like a superhero kind of thing. Again, mentioned Buffy, very similar lines of like
Yeah.
woman who can kick ass kind of stuff. So I think, yeah, this whole world is so, yeah, it's been nice that, like really reflecting on those days of growing up and the summer reading programs and getting so hooked on something and being like, I gotta read the next one. I gotta read the next one. Not quite feeling that for Fear Street, I must admit, but you know, if I'm stuck,
Yeah.
maybe I'll pick one up. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, it's less got to and more like maybe I will one day.
I'll say I buy books at the thrift store. I never see this stuff there.
Oh,
People do
I
not.
never see Fear Street or Goosebumps.
Never,
Never.
ever. People are like sentimental. And I mean, you know, somebody out there will be smart and like send you a photo and like there, I found it. Okay. Your town is full of Philistines, but whatever. But yeah, I never see these books there. I mean, I see lots of other things. Starting to see Neil Gaiman. I feel like Lena Dunham's book, see a lot of
Oh
those.
my God, every time.
I mean, sorry to say, but there were a lot of copies of that floating around out there. There's other ones, but yeah, I
Yeah.
never see, or if you do, it's like one really well-worn dog. Like you feel like, oh, I don't know if I should even touch that. That might be the only one you see. So
Yeah.
I think that's a, just now I'm deciding that's a measure of quality. If I never find you at a store, like people love you, they don't give you away.
I love thinking about like the books that you see in every Goodwill or thrift store. It's just something interesting. And of course, now I can't think of any except Memoirs of a Geisha.
Oh
All of them. Always.
was that, did that go through a like a, I mean, I know that was like probably in somebody's book club, it
Yeah.
was a
I
big
know it was
movie.
a movie. Yeah,
Yeah,
exactly.
big movie, but I'm like wondering if time, I never saw it. I mean, it sounds kind of gross. I'm pretty sure
Yeah.
it's about a guy like buying a little girl that he's. So yeah, I mean, I'm kind of fine with maybe people being over that one. We
Yeah.
can move past
Yeah.
that. Yeah, no, I mean, God, like VHS videotapes is a whole other category,
Yeah.
you know. But no, I'm a huge fan of buying books from like library books
Oh, yeah.
or thrift stores because there's a lot of good stuff out there that's just sitting on a shelf that there's also
Yeah.
a lot of garbage, but it's fun when you find, like I found Pam Grier's memoir
Oh,
recently
wow.
and I haven't started it yet, but I'm just like, that's, I'll read Foxy. That sounds great.
Yeah.
So
I love that and little free libraries because you get exposed to stuff that you
yeah.
never would. Like I just picked up Shirley Chisholm. It's the
Oh
first
yeah.
woman. Yeah, she has a memoir. So I just
Yeah.
found. So
Of course she
like
does. Yeah. That sounds fascinating,
I'm so
actually.
excited.
Such a badass. And there's, you know, depending on what town you're in, of course, we're in Los Angeles, but I mean the trove of, I'd say, like a sort of Hollywood memoirs, for lack of a better word,
Yes.
so rich. And like I've been kind of hooked on that for a while, like before I even moved out here. And so going and like hitting those, like, you know, I mean, and don't get me wrong, I went to a Barnes and Noble recently and had to like slap my hand down several times. Just the smell of that place. I'm like, ooh. I love fresh pulp. Oh God. But no, there's a lot of lonely books out there that also are waiting for you. So that's like my PSA, I guess.
Yeah.
You know.
And I love when you see someone like just finished a phase or something, someone in a little food library near me just like I think finished an acting class. So there's suddenly all these classic plays and like 100 great scenes for young actors.
Right. Somebody could invent stories around that, like the story
Yes.
behind the donations at the little free libraries. Like, I mean, I definitely sometimes I'll have stuff that I'm like, this is classic literature. And like, I feel like I actually don't put garbage out in those things. I'm like, I
No.
leave something good. I spent like a summer going to thrift stores almost every day looking for books and just buying them indiscriminately. And yeah, they pile up.
My house is crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
Yeah.
I'm gonna also I realize I'm in a closet is where I record, but I have the door open because it's so hot, and I realize
Sure.
this painting of this little boy looks extra creepy and terrifying.
I didn't notice it.
It's a
So
little boy holding a bird, but it looks very haunting.
from here, it like to me, it's there's something about the shape that I'm like, is that Catherine of Aragorn? Like it's definitely like an Elizabethan exposed
Yes, he's like
collarbone.
gruff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not reading Little Boy. I'm getting like what was his second wife? Anne Boleyn. Yeah. A little more Anne Boleyn, I think.
Oh,
Because
it
I
is
get
that neck line, that very
yeah.
square. I think he's like a little Victorian boy, but
Yeah,
I
they had
was in.
like the little Lord Fauntleroy look. Yeah, have
Yes,
that like
yeah.
napkin draped over. Yeah.
Exactly, napkin.
That should come back. That needs to come back. Oh my God. If anything else goes wrong, sorry. I can't get over Camp Nightwing's absolute blatant disregard for safety. It's
Oh my gosh.
OSHA needs to shut that place down.
Yes, not safe for its child employees.
For even
Oh,
Uncle Bill.
no. Uncle Bill is almost the first one to die. Sandy sets up a big closet to fall on him.
That's right. The filing cabinet. Yeah.
Yeah.
Filing cabinet of death. That whole scene was sort of like, I was impressed at like he described something and I understood like what was happening. Like, and that
Yeah.
sounds like such a fucking low bar for reading and literature, but I just know how, like, I think what I appreciate about it is reading it and kind of just knowing all these mistakes he's not making, you know, like
Yeah.
it's so unencumbered with ambiguity except exactly where he wants it to be, you know. I appreciate
Yeah.
that because kids can't stand like anything. Like they need, if we're gonna take them to a gray area, it's like we gotta kind of like lead them there with breadcrumbs. And
Yeah.
but like I don't know, I just feel like we're in such a period of black and white that like I see hope even in R.L. Stine, you know.
Yeah. Well, and there are great moments where even the climax sequences in this
Right.
crazy canoe rapid
Right.
sequence.
It became like River Wild at the end.
Yes. Which is also happens in the book Chelsea and I read,
Really?
which yes, all
So there's
which is
Whitewater Rapids in that. Okay.
yes, RL has a pattern. But what's interesting in that scene is that's when Sandy says, you know, I'm doing this for revenge and my brother. And Holly has that kind of moral gray area of like, I understand where he's coming from. This is wrong, but I
Yeah.
understand how he's hurt and why he's upset. And I
Yeah.
think that's so critical.
I know, right? Like I don't mean to overstate it. It's just that like this is why reading is fucking awesome. Not to sound like, you know, one of those posters at the library
No.
or
Those
school,
are good
but
posters.
they don't say fucking awesome. They should. Kids would like it. But no, because it builds empathy. Because even if you
Exactly.
yourself couldn't understand it, he like her thoughts, her processing of it helps the reader to go through the process of empathy. And like that's one of the most important things about reading. And like we're living in a time that is very like sociopathic and very like we've bred a lot of sociopathy.
Yes.
And I don't necessarily place the blame on, like, you know, individual parents. I mean, societally, we're just failing people left and right, and we're creating, like, our lives have become quite monstrous. And, you know, people do lots of things, and they're not for no reason. And so I think this is kind of, it's training, it's mental training, for understanding the world and why bad things happen.
Yeah. Fiction teaches as much as nonfiction. It's just emotional learning instead of just factual based. It's such an exercise in empathy.
Damn. Yeah. I've seen a lot of, like, memes or posts and things of late that's kind of lamenting how when we were, I don't know, I mean, I was born in 87, but growing up, like, in the 90s, the reading culture was very much like, we make jokes about it now, but, like, there was the Book It program at Pizza Hut. It's like, you finish a book, you get a personal pan pizza. There was a dog on TV on PBS who dressed up in costumes and did, you know, Wishbone. Like, he did all the classics. We had Reading Rainbow. We had, I mean, there were just, I mean, my summer reading program was like, you would, as a kid, you would just even get this chart. And it was like, every time you finish a book, you get a stamp. And once you get all the stamps up to here, you get a gift certificate to Papa John's or whatever the hell it was, or Venture Golf. Like, who cares? But that, oh my God, like, I appreciate what you're doing here on this show for that reason. Like, because I think a lot of us are experiencing, you know, brain rot and again, a lack of empathy and just, like, a general overwhelmed, you know, informed to the point of psychosis and depression kind of state. And books are such a, like, I found lately, like, I've had to work at it to get back into it. But it's like, God, they really just let your brain slow down. And that alone is a like, just give yourself the gift of a slower pace, you know, and then when you come out of it, you don't immediately shoot back up. Like, kind of, you're now like, it's great. It's the best. I just, reading is fun and fundamental.
It is like, step into a story and you never know where it's going to take you.
Yeah, I'm fully book girl. I think also, I mean, this is a couple years old now, Fran Lebowitz in Pretend It's a City, which is an excellent sort of film documentary kind of mixture of things. She said something about how she notices that young people on the subway are reading books again. Like, and so I do think, like, the pendulum swings back and forth. And I just know from my, just speaking from personal experience, that, like, I went to grad school and kind of was like, oh, I can't read anymore. You know, like, I ruined it. And then I think I came back, and then I don't know. I think, like, phones, just the doom scroll really is, it's so goddamn addictive. Anyway, we're not here to talk about any of that. I just like books, and I'm glad that you like books, and I hope your listeners like books.
I hope so too. Weird if they're here and they don't.
What are they talking about? They make me so mad. I hate listen to lots of things. No, I don't do that. No.
Good. Don't do that.
No, it's not good for you. No. Definitely don't do that. But no, thank you for, like, you know, I again, I'm like, damn, like, I need to read more of these books, these kids' books. They were such a breeze. I'm like, God, I could, like, sit and read a stack of these. We should have, like, a race, you know?
Oh, we should have our own summer reading Pizza Hut.
You know what? That's a very compelling idea. I mean, you know, I know July is officially started today, but maybe you could tee up for August or something.
Oh,
like,
maybe issue, I will.
Challenge or something, and then, like, we all get together at a pizza. I don't know. You don't have to invite all these strangers into your life. I like that. But I definitely think there's something, like, people could take. Yeah, we could all. Yeah, summer reading challenge with Pizza Hut. I like it. I'm hungry already. That sounds great.
Well, that's all my notes. Is there anything that you know you wanted to talk about that we haven't covered?
Oh, no, we covered it. I mean, the fire, the measles, the River Wild ending. I watched that movie again not too long ago, and it's just absolutely absurd. But fun. But no, I have nothing else to say other than keep up the great work, because I think this is such a cool concept. And it's also just a trip to revisit, you know, the childhood memories that flare up. And I'm like, oh my God, like, I can picture the reading room area in my library, you know. So thank you for that. Nostalgia.
Of course.
Nostalgia's dangerous, but in this case, I think it was okay.
Yeah. Would you consider it required reading?
I would. I'd go ahead and say that. Yeah.
I'd say try Fear Street. Yeah.
Something R.L. Stine, Fear Street. Like, get into it, because it's hot and it's the new old thing.
Yes.
And R.L. Stine, he seems like a cool dude, actually. I think he knows exactly who he is and what his contribution has been, and good for him. I hope he never drinks.
The back of the Goosebumps books have usually have like some silly, like a silly interview with him and some fun activities. And he
Yeah.
seems, I mean, fingers crossed, he seems like a really good guy. Like we were talking about, just someone who wants to give and have
Yeah,
fun. And I
yeah.
love
I mean,
that.
you hear very unfortunate stories sometimes about
Yes.
popular writers, and he hasn't fallen into that.
Yeah,
I
he's
will say,
quiet.
just as like a personal
Yeah.
recommendation, like to the world, I think one of the most like impactful books I ever read growing up was Alan Mendelssohn, Boy from Mars, which is by
Oh.
Daniel Pinkwater. And similar to R.L. Stine, Pinkwater has a very like he would review children's books for NPR. He was like very playful kind of guy, also does illustrations and stuff. But that book was fucking awesome. I'm just gonna say it one more time. Alan Mendelssohn, Boy from Mars by Daniel Pinkwater. I highly recommend that to anyone listening. It entered my brain and completely changed it. I don't know. So
You'll have to come back and do it.
maybe, you know, no pressure though. Wait till I get my review card back about, you know, this guest.
Well, is there anything you'd like to plug as we round out?
No, I mean, you hit it at the top, which I appreciate because I feel like that's the place to do it. So I'm all set. Thank you so much for having me.
Awesome.
I really appreciate it.
Sure. Thank you. I'm going to stop the recording.
Sick.